Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to talk about a very unique, as I call New Age children's books these days. Anything outside of The Prince, The Frog, and The Pumpkin is really giving us a different outlook on children's lives. The stories we tell them, what we'd like to create for their lives, how we'd like them to reflect upon the world around them, and how we'd like them to engage with others. It truly is about being able to create a whole new expansive way of looking at the world. It's no longer strife, struggle, pain, famine of the past. It's truly about what can we create in the moment. And do we really have to drag all that old history with us, all the old illusions and dreams, and be able to say, I'm in the moment, what can I do going forward, and what is life truly all about? Today, my guest is Jay Siegel. His book is Water at the Top of the World, A Story of Legends and Learning. Josh, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Josh, tell us, what made you write something of this type of book? Because I've read a lot of New Age books, and let me tell you, they've gotten very esoteric and philosophical, as yours has also, and each one seems to have a different message. What is yours?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So this book came out of some conversations that I was having with my own kids. This was a few years ago when I started working on it. And one of my children had told me out of the blue that, you know, he thought he was an atheist. And you know, my family is religious, but, you know, we're not super observant. We're not super dogmatic. We want to give our kids the idea that, you know, there is a source of life and that all life is connected and precious. But, you know, we haven't given them a ton of what I would consider to be dogmatic or, you know, top-down sort of you must believe this or that sort of education. And so my first thought when he told me that, he thought that, you know, he might be an atheist. I thought, well, who put that thought in his head and where did he get that idea? And when I teased it out with him a little bit, what I realized was that he just came up with that on his own. And it was something that he kind of just looked at the world and thought, well, you know, I just don't believe in this or that.
Right.
And, you know, he still has a great deal of respect for life. He's very kind. And I think he thinks that life is precious. And I think he believes in what he doesn't have the words for, but we would call spirituality. Right. And I wanted to ask myself, you know, as his parent, as the person who's going to help educate him and bring him forward in this world, it's my responsibility to kind of give him a guide, right, towards what he's going to encounter in the world when he meets other people. You know, where we live, there's it's very diverse. There's a ton of different religious traditions and cultural traditions, and I know that he's going to encounter a lot of differences and a lot of different things. And the more I looked into it, you know, the more I thought, well, that's not just true for someone who claims they may not believe in the concept of God or even spirituality altogether, but for anyone, no matter what your beliefs. And I really tried to think, what is the most sure-footed approach that I can take with him? And I started thinking back to, like, it really made me think about, like, where did we all come from and where did all these different religious traditions come from and all that? And that's, you know, more than one person can answer. But the more I looked into it, the more it brought me back to this concept of the story of the flood. And everywhere you look around the world, they have this legend, right? The story.
I think sometimes, too, is also to children come in with the openness and awareness. Unless we bombard them right from the get-go with our old history, if we just let them allow to them to be, they will share with us the perhaps of the world, the exponential of the world, the magic and the alchemy of it. And they will say, but why? But why? And they don't want an answer. They want you to explore the concept with them. And I think that's what your book is about how do you take a concept? You could say, I see it through my own reflection of history of what my story might be. But how do we take a concept and say, what are the potentials? Well, how can we take it? How can we do the golden thread through the cosmos, so to speak, idea? Don't you think that that's what we want to really do with children in the beginning?
I mean, I think you're right that that's what children do. And yeah. we can either choose to celebrate it or we can try and like squish it out of them, you know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways that I wrote the book. When, you know, you go through the text of the book, and some people have pointed out that this is like, you know, a little disturbing to them, or in a children's book, they think it's kind of unusual, is that almost every idea in the book is presented from multiple angles at the same time. And it talks about some people are doing this, some people believe this, some people think that, and trying to put sort of a conceptual, maybe not a wrapper around that, but some sort of, like you say, like through lines or threads through to understand why it is that people believe these different things and why it is that people have such strong reactions to encountering different beliefs. So I do think that this book is hopefully a guide, you know, not just for children, but also for adults to start thinking about some of those things in a more open way.
I think also, too, the idea right from the get-go that you were starting to say is about, I think of floods as a washing away, times in history when the old just gets to a peak of a resonance that you're just like, ooh, I feel like I'm just sticking my finger in the outlet and I just got to let it go, you know, kind of idea in a population. And in comes the floods. You know, I live in New Orleans. And they say Katrina was here just to wash away all the bad. And we're like, no, I don't think so. That Katrina just came because it just did. Let it just be for whatever it was. And then out of it came people doing different things. Some left, some got angry, some were happy, some restored, some stuck their feet in the mud, some praised and sang to the heavens. So what it did was it created all of those potentials to come forth. So I think sometimes when you have, as you say in your book, a flood, you start your story with, it's really about being able to say, let's just wash away our mind and our thoughts, what we've had indoctrinated before. Let's start anew. What can be? Perhaps, maybe, and what if? Those are three pretty profound words, yes?
Yeah, definitely. And I also think that, you know, one of the things that the book is dealing with a little bit is kind of under the surface, is that it is common to have this story throughout many cultures around the world that we did, humanity as a whole experienced a point of renewal, and we've had to rebuild. And some people believe that, you know, prior to this rebirth of humanity, that, you know, there were other human civilizations that had tremendous amounts of technology. Some people believe that that's total nonsense. We don't really know, and that's kind of part of the point. But whatever you believe about before that, the humanity since then has been building up this series of societies, series of cultures around the world, and they're increasingly becoming interconnected. And we're building towards something, we don't know what, but it's very clear that with satellite technology, internet technology, transportation technology, that people are becoming aware in a way that is kind of unprecedented in human history of what other societies and what other cultures are up to. And I hope that this book will cause people in conversations with their families and with themselves to ask the questions, where is it all going?
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
know, you almost look at it, and I've always said is that, you know, some people are saying we are a spiritual body here for human experience. And mm-hmm. I really say, did we really come down here to be able to slosh in the mud and have diseases and be broken and all this other stuff? When really, uh-huh. if we look at all of our lifetimes and eons, isn't it not maybe a little bit more politically correct or philosophically correct to say that we are energy sources having experiences within the realm of the cosmos? When you almost look at it like that, it really frees you up to say, well, maybe I was this then, or maybe I had that experience then, or maybe mm-hmm. I could believe that today, or maybe next week I can go on to something else. I think what it really does is it super frees you up to not take something on as your identity. It is you. Rather say that you as an energy source are having this experience and engaging with that idea for the moment versus, you know, incorporating a say like, you know, my diabetes as if it's my disease and I own it. You know what I mean? Rather just saying yeah. that I have a physical experience in a diabetic state. You know, so I think the mm-hmm. idea also is how can we flip that conversation throughout our generations to be able to explore all this other stuff that's out there, right?
Yeah, and I think as you alluded to before, children kind of have that awareness just innately that mm-hmm. they are creatures that are inhabiting bodies. And like when you look at children from the time that they are born until they become, you know, young adults, let's say, they're going through constant change and development. And I think that they have a fundamentally different relationship to their physical beings, their right. physical bodies, than we do once we spent, you know, a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades in our, like, adult bodies, which are also always changing. But we kind of tend to forget that in a certain way that I think our kids are still, like, always aware of.
Talk for a second about books of dogma, belief, habits, history.
Sure.
And I always think of it this way. People say, but this is my belief. This is the core of my religion. This is the core of history. You know, I spoke with someone one day, and I said, why are you watching all these news things? And the person said, because it's history. It's their speaking, you know, out and their all this stuff and the truth or whatever. And I'm going, all it is just noise in my head, you know, and uh-huh. I just couldn't even understand it. And I think sometimes children feel that way, is that all of the history, you know, if you ever look at their books that they're using, I live in Louisiana, they're still using antiquated books that I think must have been printed in the early 1900s, you know, in schools. And I'm going, why is that? You know, and then we'd even look at education. And if you have a more expensive or a more elite school, they might be having books that have just been written in the past 2 years. But they might have a totally different history, totally different concept, maybe totally different story. So really, in essence, there are so many concepts and stories going around, yet we always think that there's one that everybody is attuned and believe in, yes?
I think it's true that people tend to assume that other people share their core beliefs more than other people actually do share their core
right.
beliefs.
Right.
I think that the more that we can open up our minds to understanding that other people have different core beliefs, I think it would benefit all of us.
Do you think that it turns around and takes a belief and then turns them into illusions?
Maybe. But I also think that there's a lot of value in some of these traditions, and you know that I strongly believe that like we shouldn't throw away the baby with the bathwater, mm-hmm. and that there's a really, really good foundational healing place in human experience for things like ritual and
right.
Taking meaning from our physical interactions with the world and trying to use that to elevate our experience. I think that's all stuff is all really important. So I'm not trying to say that, you know, cultural traditions should be washed away or that we all need
right.
to, like, forget the past. Quite the opposite. I think that looking to the past as a unifying sort of idea is really more what this is about.
Well, I think really, though, what's really wonderful about your book is it starts to encourage parents, grandparents, whoever's reading the book to a child, to open up to awareness. Because let's say we all want to talk about maybe a war at one time, and everybody's got a certain kind of aversion or a time frame. You know, I had a guest on my show, and he was talking about the war in Israel, and I'm going, Mom, what years was that? And he said 69 to 74. And if you look at it, in Israel, they were all worried about that war. Yet if you look at America, we were all worried about the Vietnam War. If you look at another country, they didn't even know that there was a war because there was no internet then, you know. People just didn't always know all of this stuff. And I think it's so interesting to say that when you talk about all of these things, we don't really throw out the stories or a dogma. What we're really doing is exploring the story for its golden thread. What truly is in there? What did the war tell you? It said that people were angry. People felt they felt that they were not cared for. They felt that something was wrong or taken advantage of or whatever it might be, or I felt that they needed something or whatever it is. And when you come right down to it, if you lined up all the great stories of the world of floods, conflicts, wars, you know, crisis, collapsing, all of those things have a golden thread, and they might drum them down to one word. It might be all the same word, yes?
Maybe. I've heard it said that, you know, no one thinks they're the bad guy in a war, right? Everybody's fighting for something. And I definitely believe that that's true for most people in most areas of history. But I also really like your idea that from any situation, you can pull out this this unifying thread. You know, I think that for me, love would be a really good candidate for that in just about any situation. If you can reduce it down to where's the love in that situation, then you're really reducing it down to what's important. But I also think that, you know, diversity of experience and understanding different perspectives is really important. So I think that maybe we want to be doing both of those things, is trying to figure out what is that golden thread and what is that commonality, but also to be able to, like, you know, look into the kaleidoscope and notice all the different things that are going on and how beautiful all of that difference can be.
Yeah, because it's really about being able to see all of the differences of people, but to see where everyone might be coming from. And then what it's really done, in essence, is raise your awareness of the world around you. And isn't that really the next stepping stone? I think because to have awareness is so vitally important, because awareness is not judgment. When you turn around and you have judgment and you cast it into these silos type of thinking, then you get kind of stuck there. But if you have an awareness, you have a sense of going around the world and being able to feel and understand and have a knowing. And really, that's where kids really blossom, about what is life about? Where do we come from? What is this all about? How did this get there? What does that say to me? And who are we? You know, are we humans? Are we gods? Are we spirits? What are we? So it really opens up the door to have almost a different conversation every day from a different perspective, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. One of the things that people have given me as feedback about this book is that it tends to create conversations when they read it to their kids. So I feel really good about that. I hope that they're having those conversations that are leading them through those exact topics that you're talking about.
Right. You know, and also, too, now that we've had a lot of spiritual awakening and spiritualism these days, I think spiritualism has been around for eons. It's just that it either got drummed down, cut out, tossed away, or, you know, burned at the stake, whatever you want to call it, along as you go. However, now people are starting to talk about, you know, what is the universe all about? How did we get here? People are talking about ETs. They're talking about internet, AI, all this other stuff. And there's so much information about the expansiveness of things out there that we've really never conceptually had an engagement then, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the history of organized religion is of necessity the history of groups of people deciding what's the right thought and what's the right belief, and of necessity getting rid of a bunch of other things. You can look at the history of Gnostic Christianity, you know, things like that from history. And I think that now with the advent of particularly the internet, but not just the internet, you know, cable television, satellite communications, being able to get instant news reports of things that are going on around the world, there's not as much ability to do that. People are free to go out and look at different ideas from around the world, from any time in history. You could spend, you know, as much time as you have available for the rest of your life just doing research on what did people believe in different places at different times. And I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's definitely different. You know, and we look at it, I've always said this, I said this one time on the show. If you look back at it, we were building pyramids eons ago. Then we went to the cowboys and Indians, and I said, what happened to humans and their brains? You know, you had great philosophical times. You had all of this magnificent building and sculpting and alchemy, and then you went to be a cowboy and Indian in history? What did that lineage come to, you know? And then now...
Yeah.
And now, you know, not that far from the cowboys and Indians, we're looking at all of this other exponential stuff and, you know, the universe kind of concept. So
yeah.
We grow and we expand in leaps and bounds, I think, to fit the collective, as I would call it. In other words, we wouldn't be saying to kids, you know, hey, cowboys and Indians are coming up and that's our next story in the place we are in now, because they would be like, what? We're so much more than that. We're so much different than that. We're already expanded from that. So each point, I think, in history teaches us a part of our soul. And then as we expand and that part is complete, we go on to another experience and we find out something else. Like right now, I think we're probably in the point of wonderment and expansionness. So in other words, how far can we take our minds? You know how the concept that all the teenagers say, oh, my mind was blown. You heard that before, right? You probably used it. You're young enough.
I probably said that.
So the idea is that, oh, wow, whoa, you know, what's that all about? Was really, all of a sudden it showed up and, whoa, how cool is that? Because it wasn't there before and now it is in my thoughts. Don't you think that that's leaps and bounds in history is really where we just... It just shows up, you know. History is all of these other things. It's when we drag history with us, with the old energy, that we get really not so good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and scientists will tell us that, biologically speaking, humans 5,000-6,000 years ago were fundamentally identical to the humans of today from a physical standpoint.
Right.
So, you know, you could look at, like, the ancient Greek philosophers, if you want to, you know, leave religion out of it for a minute, just the things that they were coming up with, the ideas, like they're fundamentally the same humans that we are today. And they probably led personally very similar lives, and we could probably relate to them very well.
You and I could have a great conversation with them. We'd be right along there.
I'd love to think about that, you know?
Yeah.
But the question that you're bringing up then is like, what has been changing over those last years? And it's these things that are harder to define. It's the spiritual awareness, it's building of societies and cultures, it's the energy that we're trading off between people and the ideas that are being carried around. Like, there's this idea that in data science that, like, information is its own, like, almost like a substance. And people will talk about how, like, data wants to be free and information has, like, its own almost like its own goals that are intrinsic to it existing, wanting to spread. And that if you think about ideas transferring and spreading between cultures and between societies throughout history, that there's this idea that, like, we may be the vessels for all of this information. And that might be, in some ways, like a purpose of human societies and cultures interacting, is to cause all of this awareness, knowledge, energy, spirituality on any different level you want to look at it, to mix and to reform and transform.
It's almost, I always look at it, I always have this saying, my best one is just put a handful of glitter, throw it up in the air and blow it to the wind. It's almost like every little speck of glitter is an essence as you observe it. You know, you think of quantum physics, I observe it so it exists. And in 5 seconds, it'll be gone. But the idea is that we're all pieces of everything, yet we all exist within everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at it that way, people will say, oh, my gosh, you know, all I believe is what I was told in school and I had to memorize, you know. I can remember I had a catechism when I was growing up in the 50s, and it was you had to memorize everything on the page to be able to get it to, your test done and go to the next grade, you know. It was like, this is ridiculous, you know. And then when my kids started to do it, bring home stuff to memorize again, I'm like, that's stupid. We're not memorizing their dogma. We want to learn something. Do you know what I mean? And I think the idea is that look, even in the past 100 years, how we've gone from let's memorize dogma to be able to think straight. And right now I really see it, especially with all generations, is that we're coming up on a crisis of when we can let go of that and have open creative thought. Because right now the systems that are vested in the stories, in the history, in the dogma is really, really holding on to be able to say, oh no, we must still exist. And everyone is saying now, no, you can no longer exist. Don't you think that sometimes, even you see it with children, if you share a story with them and they're like, they just don't believe it and they won't even go back by you, they don't even want to listen to any more of your stories because they're just not entrained in that. Yet you're so vested, you want to come sit down, come listen to my story, come, I want to tell you. You know what I mean? Kind of idea.
Yeah,
and it's,
that's like the ultimate parenting challenge.
Yeah.
is knowing that you're right, but also knowing with equal certainty that your kid doesn't care how right you are in this moment, and how do you approach that moment with compassion and openness, like you say.
Right.
It's really, really hard, and especially when, you know, you have this authoritarian moment where you know you're right, you know you're acting in their best interest, and you know that there's, you know, you only can see one way, like, your kid is you had to pull over your car and your kid wants to like get out of the car and run into traffic, and you don't have time for empathy for why they want to get out of the car. You only really have one job, and it's super authoritarian. You're going to get back in the car and I'm going to put you there whether you're screaming and kicking, and who cares, right? And so you definitely have those moments, and even with things that are less immediate and dire, like just trying to tell them ideas about, you know, like certain things that you know are right or wrong. But I also think you're right that, like, if we are careful about when we do that, and we try to, you know, understand our own fallibility, even as we're putting forth these messages, then I think we'll do a better job than just telling kids, like, well, this is how it is because I said so.
Right.
Even though I hear myself saying that to my kids all the time, because sometimes you just can't avoid it. But I think you know, don't you think that understanding the concept that all received wisdom should be questioned, and that dogma is inherently limiting will help us with that?
Don't you think also, too, the idea is that everything we as parents or as elders might be doing is generally based upon our history, our experience, our memories, and our insistence of you feel that you need to prevent, you need to protect, you need to keep secure, you need to be stable, you need to have assurances, you need to be positive and light and all these other things. In other words, who are we to say that we are in control of another being, yet we as humans now are saying that we do?
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole question of whether humans should be in control of other humans, I think, is a big one that our entire society is trying to answer right now, because as you were alluding to earlier, the systems of control and vested interest and clinging to old ideas are, you know, well entrenched in our culture, and even in certain venues, calling out the idea that those things even exist in the first place is controversial. I'm not sure why it should be, but it seems like it is.
Well, Josh, also, too, in closing, I wanted to touch on this, is that when we are reading to the children, and especially when we're reading your book, Water at the Top of the World, is about being able to say, when children have these other ideas or thoughts, and say, maybe say, well, in my experience in the past, I see it this way. However, I would love to hear about your experience in the present. And wouldn't that be such a different conversation? I think there's going to come to a breaking point, as we will say, where there won't be any more memories, there won't be any more past. All of a sudden, it will just like Dorothy with the clicking her red shoes, pop, pop, we're gone. And that won't show up anymore. So, like, we're kind of like inching towards there. And one day, maybe we'll be to the next frequency, we'll be to the next dimension, who knows. But the point is that a lot of this stuff that we've been carrying and holding on to will just go, it's unimportant anymore, yes?
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. I mean, you know, my tradition says that part of our job is to prepare ourselves for that, and that, you know, that won't happen until we do the necessary work. But yeah, I think it's a really lovely thing to, you know, aspire to. And in the book, I deal, in the second part of the book, it deals more with this idea of colliding cultures, but it also deals with this idea of being available to the energy of the universe.
Right.
And that, drawing a kind of an analogy between the way that we use tools to help us experience the energy of the universe on a really physical level, like telescopes and satellites and things like that, but that also we can use our traditions to try and help us access higher levels of energy that are maybe not as physically obvious.
Right. And I think it's definitely about, as you said, it is our job to be able to expand our awareness. And by being and having and writing these children's books, it is expanding our elder awareness into joining into the aspects of where the children are right now, coming in as free and unknowing and as untethered as they are. And I think so it's really starting to flip that egg on the other side and saying, you know, we're getting there. So just keep going, just keep going. So I think really the idea with New Age children's books, as I've said, is about opening for potential. Listen, everything is not firm. There is no, quote, firmness in the truth of one that everybody has. There are just many truths for the moment. And as you know, many of those change. You know, when you go to the doctor, people come to me, you know, I'll say, yeah, that was what we used to do 10, 20 years ago, but we don't do that anymore. So what is truly firm and what is truly locked down, and being able to flow with the energy is truly where we're at. So as grandparents and parents, when you read to children, if you allow, you know, an older teen or a tween to read this book to a younger child, it's being able to say, hey, let's talk about this. What's a new story? Tell me. You could just read one page of your book, Josh, to a child and say, now, tell me what's going on. What's your story? What are you thinking? And they can go off for the next 20 minutes and fall asleep. You know what I mean? Just from one phrase or one sentence. So what you're doing is really instilling an energy with your words on the page. And just saying, I'm going to instill that in a child, sit here and be fully engaged with them and see what opens up. And then dream. Yes?
Yeah, thank you. That's a really beautiful way to talk about a children's book. One more thing that I wanted to mention on that topic that you were just talking about is that some people have, you know, I had a lot of people read this book and give me feedback, and I was talking to religious people and anthropologists and just readers, you know, to get their feedback.
Right.
And one of the ideas that we came across was that, and this is not a something that we discovered or is a, like a new idea, but just something that kept coming up again, was that sometimes we think that children want an answer and they want the, you know, information. Like I might say, like, how do I do this thing? And someone who really knows about it will say, you do it like this.
Yeah.
But a lot of times what children are really looking for is they're looking for the story. They're looking for the why and the how and all the information they can soak in, because children are, you know, not every child, of course, but most children are really much more comfortable with ambiguity of not knowing things, of not knowing all the specific details, because they live in an ever-changing world. And they're accessing different levels of information, even on the same topic, as they grow and learn. And so that was one thing that we really wanted to stick with the book, was this idea that sometimes things are one way, sometimes things are another way, but it's the reasons behind it that are the most important thing.
And you know, Josh, I'll tell you, I work a lot with end-of-life clients, and you know what the one thing that they only want before they leave is they just want to be heard. That's it. They don't want to know the answer, where they're going, how they got there, what was right, what was wrong, what they did, what they didn't do, all that other stuff. They just want to say, can you just sit down and listen to me? And isn't that just what a child wants? They want to be engaged in your energy, period. If we walk this earth, you know, from any generation said, let's sit down and engage in your energy and then just lay down and see what they say, isn't that exciting? You know, I know with my own kids, they're in their 40s now. Every night before we went to bed, I used to read them books in the beginning, but then I stopped doing that. I would go, because I was in medical school and I was out all the time, and sometimes I'd come in and they would just say, lay down, tell me a story, and I would just tell them anything that came to my mind or my thoughts. Sometimes I would just make noises and sing a song. Sometimes I would just sit there and go, yada, 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 and they would go, oh, okay, and then they would start doing it. So in other words, if you just let the energies roll, can you imagine the dance there'd be? It would be such a different thing. I think the idea, Josh, with your book again, Water at the Top of the World, it's such a great book for kids to expand with. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about that? You, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much. The website for the book is simply wateratthetopoftheworld.com. And from there, you can look at some reviews. You can get a link to purchase it on Amazon where it's available. And you can find it on BookBub and Kindle. And places like that. But the main place to go for getting access to all that stuff is wateratthetopoftheworld.com.
Well, Josh, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. I think sometimes when we talk about kids' books, I mean, what we did just now is exactly what we'd like to share, is about having that engaging story, yes?
Yeah, definitely. It was a really fun conversation. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. If you'd like to find out more information about Josh Siegel and his book, Water at the Top of the World, a children's book, a new age children's book, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page and you go directly to his website. And it truly is about how can we dance with the energies of the world, create new stories, new dreams, go through alchemy, and be a mystic in our own existence. Isn't that so freeing? Other than the stories, the history, the rights and the wrongs that we've harbored from the past, it's really about being able to be free, release it, let it all go, and start anew. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family. Clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.